Hello and welcome to OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
A podcast bringing to you the voices and ideas of open educators from around the world.
OEG Voices is produced by Open Education Global,
a member-based nonprofit organization
supporting the development and use of open education globally.
Learn more about us at oegglobal.org.
There's much to take in at a global level.
We hope to bring you closer to how open education is working
by hearing the stories of practitioners
told in their own voice.
Each episode introduces you to a global open educator.
And we invite you to later engage in conversation with them
in our OEG Connect community. See you there.
Well, hello there. This is Alan Levine from Open Education Global, and it's exciting to do another January podcast for OEG Voices. And this is part of something we started last year to feature winners of the Open Excellence Awards. And so we are kind of a new concept here, but I want to introduce first to say hello my colleague Marcela Morales, who's the wizardess behind the scenes of everything with the awards. And so how did the field look this year?
Hello, everyone. So excited to be here. And thank you, Alan, for leading the way in making this happen, this beautiful conversation that we're just about to have. And this year, 2021, was a special year for the awards because we're celebrating the 10 years, the first 10 years of the awards, I should say, hopefully. And it was a very exciting year. It's every year it gets more difficult to choose the best projects because so many great proposals come through the committee. So this year was no exception. We even had to do some adjustment to the categories to make sure that we were able to get 2-3 winners per category because they were so good. And because of the conversation that we're having here today, I should say that BC never disappoints, and we're going to be talking to 3 of the very beautiful projects that every year I'm so excited to see from that region of the world. So and also all of you already know my colleague, Alan, and I don't need to say how wonderful he is to lead this conversation. So I'm just super excited to be tagging along for the conversation. So thank you.
Thank you. I don't pay Marcela for the compliments, but you know, one of the interesting things was the OER Implementation Award was given to all 294 presenters at the OE Global Online Conference. And I'm working on scheduling a podcast with that crowd, which will be a challenge. But speaking of big crowds, I wanted to try this concept to bring in a group of winners that had some commonality. And so the first group that made sense was representing 3 award winners from British Columbia. So the theme of the show is it might be, what is it about BC that makes it kind of this hotbed for open education? And I have some sense, but I want to hear that from my colleagues and friends. So I thought long and hard over lunch to try to figure out, I do like to do introductions, but we know how they can go on. So I'm going to ask the representatives of the 3 projects very quickly to do a hello and maybe just say one thing about that they love about BC living there that people elsewhere might not know. Okay. So like your favorite insider thing for BC. So I'm going to start with representing the Open Pedagogy Award winners in the Open Pedagogy Challenge Series. And we're still, unfortunately, Tanis Morgan isn't here, but we will wait for her to jump in. But we have Leva Lee here. So hello, Leva. It's good to see you.
Hi, Alan. And hello to everyone today, this morning.
Yeah.
BC, I would say it's kind of a little bit like the Wild Wild West. I think they're great innovators. And I think for me, my favorite thing is the access to natural landscapes and the beauty of nature, I think is really brings lots of peace and solace, I think, for people. And so, yeah, that's my favorite thing.
And that's pretty important right now. And so we'll move to the two people who are behind the next award winner in the Open Reuse Remix category. And they're all favorite projects of mine, but definitely two people I know very well. So we have representing the audio version of the 25 years of EdTech audio series, kind of just making Martin Weller just a little bit more famous, which is good. But I say hello to my friends Laura Pasquini and Clint Lalonde. So do you want to each take your turn at the what's great about? And Laura, you know, we stretch the boundary because you're actually a little bit south of BC.
All right, you start. Go ahead.
I was going to say the ferries to get across all the waters. So we're not that far away. I'm just a quick ferry ride or a couple hours to the border in the far left of US. And I think it might be the idea of how things flow with the idea of water and the sounds and between the little islands and nodes that we connect. I guess the metaphor is there's never a shortage of connection and community around British Columbia and this far left USA where I live. So I think I really appreciate that about British Columbia and this side of the world.
And hi, everyone. Clint Lalonde here. I'm a prairie boy. I come from like the middle of Canada or what brought me out to British Columbia originally was I was tired of winters. And so that's something that people in other parts of the world may not know about. This particular area of British Columbia I live in on Vancouver Island, which is about as far west in Canada as you can get. But we rarely get snow and we have a lovely environment here, which makes being outside year round fantastic. So that's one thing I really appreciate about living in this part of the world.
You did get a little bit of snow this year, right?
We got a little bit of snow, yeah. But that's, yeah.
Excellent. And then
no minus 20s.
That's kind of warm, but I won't go into that. The kind of the award that kind of actually overlaps both those projects, and we'll get to that again, is in the open infrastructure category, which was new for the awards this year. And we're excited to have three award winners. And so in this case, we were recognizing the Open ETC, which is the Open EdTech Cooperative. And so everybody here sort of has a piece in this. But I want to ask, maybe I'll call Grant because he looks eager to say hello and give his special BC.
Yeah, well, I live in Eastern Canada, but the coolest, most creative, dynamic, collegial, you know, fun people that I've ever met in the work that I do all reside in BC. So, or they pass through BC frequently. So I say that's my favorite thing about BC.
All right. And then I'll flip over to Anne-Marie Scott, who is kind of new to BC, right?
Yeah, a year and a bit now. And yeah, I guess, what do I like about BC? Coming from Scotland, mountains, rivers, like Clint, I spent a little time on the prairies before I came here. Flat, not for me. I like a little bit of variety in the scenery. And apparently I didn't have enough weather in Scotland and fancied some more over here. So I've had wildfires and I've had winter and torrential flooding. So yeah, all the weather you could possibly want.
All right. And then I'll flip over to Troy Welch, who is in somewhere in the wilderness of BC, right?
The Slocan Valley, which is probably the best place on earth. People in the Slocan and BC generally tend not to accept the boundary conditions and the givens, and they're constantly pushing the envelope to find out what can be done.
All right. And then if Brian's there.
Yeah, I'm coming to you from the traditional lands of the Tecumloops Tay-Sequetmec, also known as Kamloops. And I mean, I think British Columbia does have a really amazing learning technology collaborative culture. I think a lot of that's just because people have put work and energy into it. So shout out to BC Campus and ETUG and just all the individuals and that have been open and warm. And I think part of that is, you know, you hear about the left coast, and I think this applies to the United States as well. I think British Columbia certainly has a reputation as being a place that always attracted and welcomed people that maybe didn't quite fit in other places. And there's a little bit of misfit weirdo energy out here, which is one of the things I really love.
Well, thank you. And many of you were people I got to know early in my career through many gatherings in BC. And so maybe it convinced me to move to Canada. But there were other reasons. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about you and the awards and these amazing projects. And we could spend hours. But I want to first turn to Leva to talk about the challenge series that you came up with, Tanis Morgan. What is it, and what was the idea behind it?
Okay, so the Open Ed Challenge. At that time, I think it was a couple years ago that Tanis and I were meeting over coffee. I think it was at Kafka. And for me personally, I'd been doing a lot of exploration in micro learning, and the thought that we could offer professional development in a way that was more accessible and easier for the our target, which is, you know, post-secondary educators and faculty. And I think it's always been difficult because their scheduling and they're just time crunch. So Tanis, of course, brought to the table her experience from DS-106 and the U of G Agora project, which Alan, you were involved with as well. And so together, we came up with the idea of the OE challenge, which was 10 challenges that you could take only 10 minutes to do the challenge and do two a week. And it just came out from that. And I would have to tip my hat to Tanis, as she's sort of like bite-sized challenges for busy educators. And she was the master chef. And really, I was kind of like the sous chef on the project. But I think it came off pretty well. Yeah, a lot of good participation.
Who made the cookies? Where'd the cookies come from?
Oh, yeah, well, the cookies. Yeah, it was people kind of really, they hooked onto that theme. It caught a lot of attention.
Yeah. And so what were some of the outcomes that you saw?
Well, we did the first iteration or offering was fall of 2020. And then we got really good uptake as far as people really participating and adding to the conversations, because we really wanted a lot of engagement, and people were challenged to share what they actually did in the each of the activities on a weekly basis. So Tanis and I shared the facilitation of that through the fall. I can't recall the exact numbers at the time, but and then what was really exciting was the open education team at BC Campus offered it again. They tweaked some of the challenges, and they offered it again in the following spring. So it was nice to see. And then also there's been interest in other organizations have contacted us that they want to do the challenges for their own faculty and audience. So I think that there's been a nice uptake there. And I can see Tanis is trying to connect to us. So she might have something to add as well.
Hi, Tanis. We're just dropping you right in the spot to talk about the Open Education Series. Leva just gave a really great overview, but you're the mastermind behind the cookies and the concept, I understand.
I don't know if I was the mastermind behind the cookies, but I think that might have been the graphic designer maybe that worked on it. But I should just mention I'm in an open space right now, so I hope you can hear me okay.
Sounds good.
Great. Yeah. So where are we?
we're just
Tanis, I was just explaining, I think it came up when we had our own little sort of tete-a-tete at the cafe, Kafka, I believe we were dreaming something up, and bite-sized learning for busy educators. And you're the master chef.
Since it was, you know, recognized, like what is, you know, obviously I can see it, you know, the tie into open pedagogy, but Leva already, you know, kind of insinuated that other people interested in adapting, but can you say more about sort of this as an example of open pedagogy?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's inspired by many iterations of other things, as you know, too, right? It's, there's a bit of DS-106 in there. There's a bit of the Agora and Mural projects in Guadalajara. So I think it's, you know, all of those kind of fed into this understanding that, that sometimes some of the best learning is bite-sized. and short and sweet. And there's a way to do this openly and transparently, both in the, I think, the building and constructing of the experience, but also in inviting people into it. So I think in those ways, maybe it's open pedagogy. And certainly, I guess for me, the, you know, one of the impact markers, I guess, is, you know, whether anybody picks up on it and reuses it and adapts it in some way. And that has happened a couple times now. So for me, that's, yeah, that's just really important as well, beyond just what an individual participant might get out of it, which hopefully, you know, hopefully that people do shift from being, you know, where they were when they start, and then after 10 short challenges are in a different place, and that something sticks. It's always about, you know, what sticks.
That's great. And anyone else here who kind of, you know, was part of it or observed it, or is thinking about this as an approach in the work that you do? Any comments from the BC crowd?
Well, my health abhors a vacuum. So I'll just say, I'm glad you're starting with this, because honestly, like a project like the Open ETC, like it's really just the sum of its parts. And then that turns into that weird alchemy that turns it into a little bit more than that. So I just love that this project that Leva and Tanis led, you know, really puts that front and center.
Yeah. And that was the design of my order to talk about the projects, is because it all does tie in nicely to the Open ETC. And the other thing I like about it, it's relatively simple. I mean, you published, you know, through a WordPress site, the challenges, people responded in the comments, they could see each other's work. And it was fluid enough that people could kind of come in and come out as they saw fit. And that's a nice model for Open PD.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, one of the nice things about this too is it has been reused. I facilitated it the second time around, actually, after Leva and Tanis had originally done it. And we've done it in compressed time frames. We've done it over longer periods of time. And you know, this is something that is now going to be able to be reused and reoffered, and it's timeless. You know, we'll be able to do this for, you know, the next years to introduce people to this concept of open education and open pedagogy. So it's become a really good resource that we can reuse over and over again.
I have to ask, because Marcel also runs this other event, will there be an iteration during Open Education Week this year?
We would love that. I'm not sure for Open Education Week, but what I was just trying to stay quiet and allow others to speak. But this is a model because it's so, it's very attractive and very easy to understand, that is something that we would want to replicate for the OE Latam. It's a model that I thought would work very well for that community. But more than welcome for Open Education Week too.
Well, we'll see what kind of remix we can spawn there.
Alan is a master for that.
but I'm going to go over, we're going to shift, but feel free, anybody, to jump in anytime. This is not the Alan blabbing show, hopefully not, but I want to go to Clint and Lara to talk about the 25 years of EdTech audio project they did. And so can you give the sort of the speech, the TLDR version or whatever version, like what was it and where did it come from?
The Clint sitting having a beer on his back porch, reading a draft of Martin Weller's new book and going, hey, Martin likes audiobooks. He should have an audiobook version of his own book. That was really it. That's where the idea came from. I know I've known Martin Weller, and I know many people who are listening to this know his work. Professor at the Open University in the UK wrote this book, 25 Years of EdTech. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And so I was literally just, he sent me an advanced copy of it and I was reading it. And Martin and I have talked many years about books and reading. And I know he's a huge fan of audiobooks, and that's how he manages to, you know, read, you know, 100 books a year. If you follow his blog, every year he like summarizes how many books he's written or read over the years, and it's because of audiobooks. So that's really where the idea came from. I have a background in radio and audio production, and I had some time because of the pandemic, and I thought this would be kind of a fun project. And originally I'd thought that I would just narrate the chapters myself. And then I thought, well, no, let's open it up to the community. And I started doing some crowdsourcing, and I found 25 different people to each record a chapter of it. And we were able to do this because the book was released with a Creative Commons license. So we're able to do remixes and to do format shifting because of the open license. And so that's where the original germ of the idea came from. And I had originally contacted Laura about reading one of the chapters, and she said, well, you know, that there should be more to this. Like, let's have a conversation. Let's create this sort of book club. And she took on this second part of the project, which was lining up all of these people to talk about the chapters. So we had reading the chapters and then talking about the chapters. And that was such a fantastic addition to the project that really changed the dimension of it from just an audio book into something that was much deeper and much more rich.
How did that work, Laura? What was the design of the behind the chapters?
Well, when Clint slides into your DMs on Twitter with 25 plus of your closest friends, you cannot not answer the call. And there was already banter. So like, I think that's really what it came up to. And I sarcastically went back and forth and said, well, why can't we have more voices and ideas? And then like when you raise your hand to say like, what if, then you have to like, I guess, lead the what if. So that was fun to do. Some people bake bread. Some people dealt with screaming kids in Zoom schools. We made a podcast because that's what you do in the pandemic that's still ongoing. And I thought what a unique like back channel that we're having in this Google Doc and on this thread. And I said, it'd be fun to have some debate, banter, and chat. And that's really what the goal was. And I had an idea, but there's such a great opportunity to connect with people that were talked about in the chapter that started a different open projects, we're involved in ed tech, we're involved in learning spaces. So it really hit the swath around the world of who really had some different ideas and perspectives and how much more you could like remix what was already created. And I had no idea we'd be nominated for an award. That was never our goals. Our goal was just to have a quick catch up with friends and go into some other things that we thought about of that time. And so I love the idea that it's a book, so it has an end, like, and the podcast would have an end as a producer. And it also had a kind of, where were you then? Like a year, a concept to talk about and bring people around. And that's a lot easier than like, tell me who you are, what you do, but let's really get into some of those issues and ideas. And that really just spun out by us asking people to play in the sandbox with Clint and I, and some people recording chapters, some did a bit of both. So like we tried to do this teen podcast. So good for you. We had so much fun with bringing people and other voices into the conversation. And we hope, and we see that our remix is actually being remixed and used in classes and other curriculums with other professionals. And they're really going off and doing their own kind of readaptation of what that means and their learnings and their research and their work. So we're pretty excited to see just how much of a ripple effect you can create when you start with a simple what if.
Right. And so two-part question. So what was Martin's first reaction, and how did he also participate in these conversations? So it really kind of circled back to the author.
There's a lot of, oh God, do I have to be on this podcast? And I was like, yes. Yeah, that was one. But he's like, do you want me to be a part of it? And how he wanted to know, like, how could he be involved, but not influence as much. And so I said, yeah, like, what are you comfortable with? What are you okay with? And he was pretty excited because he likes, like Clint said, he likes audiobooks, he likes podcasts. And I said, well, let's see how it goes. And I might bring you and Clint in every now and then to be like, here are we at? Where are we at? What do we need? So it was kind of an open experimentation. And he was really generous. And we did put a lot of care in those conversations. There was nothing bad other than what you might have said, Alan, and maybe Jim Groom. But other than that, like everyone was really nice and thoughtful and had good things to say. And also had some critiques because we want to be real of like there are tensions in some of the work and some of the things we talked about. And it doesn't look like the same thing around the globe. And those were okay to have. And we're just having a space for that.
So what was your favorite year in the book?
What do you think?
My favorite year.
I totally made that up on the spot. So sorry about that.
There's so many, you know, it's like asking what's your favorite child. You know?
Fair. We can just even edit that out because that was totally unfair of me to bomb you in with a quiz. But what I really...
Actually, one of the chapters I read, which was the one about the personal learning environments and stuff. I mean, I liked doing that because when I did my master's thesis, it was really built around personal learning environments, personal learning networks. And, you know, after I wrote my thesis, I hadn't really revisited some of that work until the book came along. And all of a sudden, I'm going back, you know, 10 years to when I was doing some of the research for my master's thesis. And so it was really nice for me to be able to personally revisit that time period of my life, because it was a pretty, pretty influential time period when you're working through and getting a master's and writing a thesis. So that was nice.
I had so much fun just talking to all of you, and many of you are in this room, about different aspects. But I think going back to like one of the earliest conversations I had was with Jim about the web, and thinking about the hopes and dreams we had back in 1995 to where we are now. But a lot of what we talked about, and Martin says this, is going back in history, we're still repeating the same things. So what have we not learned now? And so I think it was being in conversation with people in an intimate way was really like a fun aspect of it for me, and connecting to this community and bringing others in to listen. It's just such a different kind of open project that I'm really glad we could do and support. And but like the web, I think, God, Jim, the conversation where I made the web startup sound of the old dial-up. I think it's because there's so much more opportunities that we shouldn't let go of, even in troubling times and concerned times and later chapters, especially.
Right. And I love so many things about this, the way it kind of unfolded almost organically. So it wasn't like it had to go through some, you know, like written draft proposal process. I mean, that's the way a lot of openness should happen, as well as the levels of remix that we have seen here. And, you know, Brian just mentioning in text that he uses lots of the episodes and resources and probably his workshops and his courses. And what you're describing is that people are using this. I guess the other question is, like, would you ever do this again?
Ha. Huh. Okay, sorry. Clint and I think we're approached by an author, Martin Weller, about another book he's working on. So we said possibly the idea of like wrapping around a thing like a week or a series is kind of intriguing to me. So I said yes to Martin, but I said, can we do it in more a storytelling format, less talk, or like, can we do something different? Like, I like playing with audio as much as Clint does. I'm an amateur. I'm learning from this radio expertise, but I think if we could do it in a cool, creative way, that would be super fun.
Yeah. I just wanted to jump in on what Brian was saying about the reuse of it. And you know, one of the things that I think was highlighted in the nomination for this project was the book was already accessible because it was released under a CC license. But by turning it into audio and then transcribing that audio and then adding this extra layer of conversation around it, it's accessible in many more ways. I mean, just in terms of pure accessibility, that's a ready-baked resource that can be used in learning and teaching with so little effort now. And that's a book that's now so much more available to people. You know, there was no financial barrier to getting your hands on it, but there might still have been some other challenges to engaging with it. So the having the multiple formats is amazing. I'll be completely honest, although I live in BC, I work for a university in Alberta, and they may be the publisher of this book, but they attached this project back to the profile for that book on AU Press as well. So the whole thing is knitted together. The openly licensed book is provided on an open platform, Manifold, with this project tucked into it so that you can go off and explore it as a further resource or another way to engage with the book. So it's just such an accessible text now. Well, it's not even a text anymore. It's more than a text. And it's open in all these different ways. And you could tell I'm quite excited about this one, and I love it dearly.
Don't hold back the excitement. Tanis, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that for me, this project was, I think it really pushed openness in a new way. I mean, you have this openly licensed book, and then the recording of it, which allowed it to be openly licensed, but then this between the chapters component to it, which for me, like, I know the question was earlier about, you know, open pedagogy and the challenge series. But for me, this really pushed into a really interesting space of open pedagogy as well, and just extended, I think, our understanding about what the potential of openness in that knitting together, but in just in so many ways. So honestly, this was this, along with Wordle, this is one of my my pandemic highlights, I would say, is this project. I just looked forward to reading and to hearing the Between the Chapters podcasts every single week. And I can't say that a lot about a lot of non-worky type of podcasts. I tend to gravitate towards the comedy, but this one really grabbed me. And I think it was a really, important project. And I hope people really see it as that beyond this award as well.
I have to say, you know, as a frequent listener of the episodes, it was very human. Like you felt like we're having a conversation, you know, like we are now, or like we do in the old days and the new days when we convene. But also I there seems to be like a huge prospect for some of these new projects where you could get maybe some students working on a version of this by picking an important work that's openly licensed, do the audiobook, and then create the behind the chapters thing. It's again like the challenge series, the structure of it is not anything like complex, not to, you know, demean anything, but it's a beautiful idea and it can be done in so many ways. And we just have to get in Grant Potter's message in the chat that 25 years of ed tech audiobook, it's the new pandemic sourdough starter. Oh, thank you, Grant. And so this all leads us to talking about, and here's the big challenge, like, how do we explain the Open ETC, which was awarded the new award in the open infrastructure area? And to me, I was so excited to see it because it's like when the idea for this award came up, I was like, oh, I know the one that I think of. But can everybody explain it at once? No. I can ask everybody to jump in. What is it? You know, maybe I'll call, I don't know who I should call on because all, you know, of you have been centrally involved. But Tanis, do you want to give like the intro to Open ETC?
I'm laughing because I see in the chat, I just got voluntold.
Isn't she masterful?
You know, I think we've been doing Open ETC for several years now. And I think all of us can speak to it in a bit of a different way, which I think says something about how we came together around it with various pain points to some degree, but also various, with a common goal, I think. So was the question that you wanted me to describe, do I need to describe, explain what it is, or do we just jump right in?
I think we should talk about what makes it special because people can, you know, read about it on the awards, you know, but yeah. I mean, we could talk about a little bit the specialness of it being a cooperative and being community-based, but like mainly just your perspectives on having been part of this and even, you know, how it's done in this, you know, recent time period.
Well, so for me, the piece of it, I mean, it does use cooperative principles without being an official cooperative. So I think that's a distinction. But in some ways, that's good enough, I think, which is maybe one learning as well, is that not everything needs to be formalized in some sort of way necessarily. But the principles themselves are important. But for me, it's really a way of creating a new space for bringing, I guess, relieving some of the pain points that both faculty and, you know, people who work in ed tech at various institutions have outside of large institutions with big budgets. And that's really just bringing the tools in the hands of people who need to use them in a really simple, easy way with not a lot of, not a lot of running around and trying to fill out forms and process and that sort of thing. Just trying to, in a way, also knit together open practices. You know, if you believe that open practices require open tools, which I personally do, then, you know, how do you put open tools then in the hands of educators beyond Moodle, for example? So the Open ETC for me really solves that problem. And the coming together of community around that, which is so important, is I think we're really starting to see the fruits of that as well. And I'll let others talk about that, I guess. But that for me, that's really one of the important things about the OpenETC. And I think it's been successful at that.
Yeah, as an obvious case, the two projects we've talked about already are, you know, hosted, they're created in the OpenETC, but for Clint and you on the Open Pedagogy Challenge series, you just went and created this. You didn't have to fill out paperwork and forms. You didn't have to request from IT. You had this idea that you could pick up and run. And this is available to all higher education students and faculty in BC, which is just an amazing service. Anne-Marie?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in on that point, because I think what's really struck me, particularly just in this conversation today, is that we've got lots of examples of where the platform has filled a gap in terms of missing tools in institutions or made it easy to get something an institution wants to do off the ground. But both of these projects are projects that belong to a bigger community. And other in any other case, they would have to be hosted somewhere. They'd have to be hosted on a BC campus branded website or an institutional branded website. But there's something about being in that more egalitarian community-owned space that I think reinforces the community nature of these projects. You know, the OpenETC is explicitly constructed as a space that's community-owned and operated. So then you get these community projects happening on it. Yes, they've got sponsors. Yes, they've got people from particular places driving them. But they are designed to engage with the community and knit a community together. And I wonder how the nature of the platform maybe reinforces some of those projects or feeds into that feeling in that project that, you know, knits the whole thing together in a way that no institutional infrastructure ever could because of what it is. So I'll just throw that out there.
Oh, thank you for that, Clint.
Yeah, I actually just kind of want to pick up on that a little bit and that community nature of the OpenETC, because not only did we, you know, we needed a place to host some of the elements of the podcast. We wanted a website. So it's easy enough to do, right? We just signed up, got a WordPress site, but also I've been involved with the OpenETC and this community for a number of years now. And so when I wanted to start tapping people on the shoulder to participate in this project, who do I go to first? This community, right? And so these are the people that were part of my project. And then from there, it kind of expanded and went out. So if I didn't have the OpenETC, I mean, the infrastructure, yeah, is one thing, but we also have all of these spaces. We meet on a regular basis. We have other people in the community. You know, if I want to find a volunteer to voice something, I throw it in a Mattermost chat and it's like, hey, can somebody help me out with this? And there are people that can help out. And so that community piece is really huge. The infrastructure is there, but it's also the community that supports that infrastructure and supports the projects that are built on that infrastructure.
That's great. I'm going to ask Grant to speak in a minute, but can someone jump in and talk about, because I don't think people may not know Mattermost, but like, you know, I've seen it become like this amazing resource available to a lot of instructors to create a different kind of community space for their classes. And so what's been the growth story there or the selling point? And maybe Grant might jump in too on that.
Yeah, I think that with Mattermost, it's just sort of, if it's a lightweight collaborative platform, but it's also extensible. So you can get it to just do the basic person tagging or topic tagging. But if you wanted to do some more robust things, you can build it out into more robust things. And because you have access to the full stack, you have some, you know, a little bit more freedom. You have some more authority there. I think that it makes it, you know, within a short period of time, you can get folks started in Mattermost quickly. If you've used, like, I hate to say it, but if you use Microsoft Teams, you cannot onboard people quickly on the Microsoft Teams. It's like, that is not going to be a quick onboarding. But everyone I work with Mattermost, within 15, 20 minutes, they get it. Okay, I see. And then they can get rolling. So basically, what I see Mattermost is kind of like IRC, but with a little bit more decoration. Right? Like, so it's just using an old technology and, you know, reframing it a little bit.
Yeah. As someone said in the chat, I won't disclose, that it's not creepy Slack. there's a thing there too about this concept at the OpenETC is that offering not only access to these easy platforms that anybody can get, but they it takes away some of these burdens of having to deal with capitalist surveillance of data. And so that's very attractive.
I was thinking about, like, it's kind of the placeholder that OpenETC has is kind of the digital steward of the community. And so this is a really unique community of practice that shares artifacts, that learns from each other, that sees it as a boundless space to go to. And I think that's the one thing that other communities struggle with. If they don't have a home or a place or kind of a resource archive or see how that works evolved, they sometimes get lost. And I think it's been really fortunate that this community of practice has the richness. It's obviously from the people. Like, the platform's great, but it's really the people that are the ones contributing to, that are investing in it and being champions of, and going, well, what else? And what if? And who else can I bring into it? So I think that's where the real power comes from for this project, at least from what I've seen.
Because this was in the open infrastructure category, I'd like to maybe ask Troy Welch to say a few things, because he runs the infrastructure. And so what is this experience like for you, Troy? And maybe what do people not see about what it takes to keep this thing afloat?
Well, it's been quite interesting, because when we started, I mean, projects like this start small. So it's kind of like the opening hours of the party, you know, you put out the snacks and, you know, stuff like that. And a couple hours later, there's like 3,000 or 4,000 people. So it's been, there's been a certain wow factor to it. And now and then I have cause to pick through the sites and I see how many student portfolios there are up there. And I know how difficult it is to get website space through official channels on our campus. And so these are people who can do something that probably at some point they would have said, you know, I don't have the time to make this happen in my own institution. So things are happening easily and quickly. In terms of keeping the lights on, it's a challenge because we're probably more open and permissible in the things you can do on our servers than an IT department would be. And there's some really interesting problems to solve. I think of it as a million-sided Rubik's Cube, and every now and then I can get one side all the same color.
You always sound so calm, Troy. Like nothing knocks you off of that calm place. So I salute you. I think, did I cut you off, Grant? Because I get word that you might. I want to let Brian talk, and then I do have an important question for the crowd too.
Just to build on Troy's point, you know, like, we have been a bit more liberal, and actually, I think that's a growing pain. I think as a community, we're going to have to deal with. If I can get off the love train just a little bit. You know, like, we've been very like, oh, if someone wants a plugin, we throw it in. And that's the kind of thing I think that actually has made the platform better than what we might get if it was being provisioned by an IT department, because an IT department, you know, they have to worry more about, you know, keeping those risks lower. And so that's not a shot at IT departments, but learning technologists, we're a little different. You know, we tend to err on the side of experimentation. So let's try it out and see what happens. But then we reach this point, you know, where we grow and where people expect things, you know. And I'm looking at our Mattermost channel and the site's running a little slow this morning. And so people kind of have this expectation for it to run like an enterprise system, but we're still kind of managing it, sometimes like a Skunkworks project. And I know there's a couple plugins that are causing us problems and we would just yank them, but it's like heartbreaking because there's a couple sites that are using those plugins really well. So how do we tell those people we can't provide them a home anymore? Well, we haven't worked that out, have we? I just wanted to also, before I hand back off, but I think that is part of what it was. I mean, to me, to go back to like the real early motivations for having a shared platform, besides the fact that the resourcing issue was, I just remembered, you know, when having conversations with Tanis and Grant, I just saw the work that they and their teams were doing. And I just really wanted to be able to check out the how they set their sites up. I wanted to see what plugins they were using, how they configured things, and then to be able to copy it. I mean, that's just another level. And I just want to say the project's here. I mean, it you know, whether or not they would be cloned, like, if you want to look at how a really stellar podcasting project is set up, you could go take a look at, you know, at what Clint and Laura did. And the same thing too, you want to look at a really great community outreach story gathering project, you can look at what Leva and Tana's did and the stuff that Alan's done. So, and that's where I think the potential of a collaborative open platform really takes real heat, because that's where you start seeing, you know, beyond the sum of our parts. You know, we can really build on each other, and it's effortless collaboration. I can go take a look at what people are doing without bothering them, without taking their time, without asking anything of them. And I also know they're fine with it, because that's the spirit of this community.
Yeah, I just wanted to also underline something that OpenATC is as well. As you know, there's this practical piece to it, which is getting open tools and an experimentation place in the hands of educators and administrators like ourselves. So there's that, but there's also this, I think, valuable piece of it, which is, what does this model of community and collaboration look like in this sector? And, you know, and how does it function as a model? And you know, how can it function as a model in other places as well? That, you know, we're not the only sector where we have institutions with resources, institutions with less resources. So I think, you know, that's probably a common thread that extends beyond our sector. But again, the model of doing it and trying out a new model, I think, is also just a really important contribution to underline. And, you know, I have to also just give a shout out as to how the broader community also supports. So BC Campus has supported this project for 3 years with some pilot funding. You know, TRU gives a lot of in-kind resource to this project. So there's this, the model itself of how the larger community comes together just to support it beyond just the users is also really important, but I think it's extendable.
Yeah. And I Anne-Marie's going to jump in, and I don't know if she'll touch on it, but like, what would it take to do this elsewhere? Like what are the magic mixes, ingredients that BC brought to the table for the OpenETC?
I wasn't going to touch on that, but I'll try in a moment. I guess what I wanted to say was, what I like about this model is that it allows people to play at the scale they're able to play at. BC Campus are able to give money. TRU are able to give time. Other institutions are able to give a little bit of a learning technology resource, or can hire a co-op student to create some support materials. So it's not a one-size-fits-all model. And I think that is really important when you think of what the sector looks like. It's a sector of very different capability and capacity. It's a sector that goes from community colleges with $2.50 to spare right through to, you know, very big and research-intensive universities. And it allows everybody to come in and play and doesn't have one price for admission to come in and be part of that community. So I think that's a really, really important part of the model, that it explicitly tries to negate barriers by having all these different ways to contribute and all these different ways to participate. And so I think if you were to think about how it might fit elsewhere, that's the key of it. It's to not have just one way of participating, but to look at what the community has to offer and make it possible for everybody to bring the bits they can to the plate and work out how to fit it all together. And there are good examples of this kind of thing in other jurisdictions. Some of you know I do a little bit of work with in French higher education, with a consortium called ASAP Portail, and they do have this kind of shared services for themselves as a sector. I think it's something the Anglophone education system doesn't do enough of, and actually other jurisdictions around the world are probably doing better than we are. But don't create barriers to participation, explicitly design for participation. That's the key.
The other thing I find really interesting about the OpenETC is the support model that's involved, because people are usually used to, you know, phoning an IT department or phoning the provider or the service they've paid for, and the support model in OpenETC is also community-based. It starts with some institutional representatives, and a lot of support comes out through the Mattermost channels. And, you know, I mean, in a dream world, the people who set the system up would not be involved in support at all. people help each other. And, oh, yeah, I had that problem. Here's how you get around it. So that's also quite interesting. And I think people get support much quicker than they do in other avenues, which is also a good thing.
All right. Thank you, Troy. So I have to tell you, we have had a lot of queries come into Open Education Global. No, I just made that up. Explain the chickens. What's with the chickens?
They're clucking great.
I could try to really quickly tell the story. And it's actually good that you asked, because I think there's been someone we should have shouted out that we haven't. And it's actually influenced a few of our projects here. And that's Brian Mathers. And very early on, we got a tiny little bit of seed funding early on. I think we got some kind of little mini flash grant, I think, from BC Campus. That was actually before the sustaining funding that Tanis thankfully thanked BC Campus for. And we thought, oh, we'll just get Brian to whip up a few images for us. And then, of course, if anyone's worked with Brian, that's not how he works. He's like, no, I want to talk to you. And he actually really facilitated some masterful conversations that actually really shaped the way we think of ourselves. And we had a very unwieldy name too. I don't even remember what it was when we tried to do the hashtag. It was just, it looked like gibberish. And, you know, he was the one who came up with the name OpenETC or OpenEd, you know, and that. And he just really helped us. He asked us so many good clarifying questions. So he gave us a bunch of sketches. And I think it was something that, Grant might have offhand said something like free range tech or something. And so just one of many sketches, one of them was a chicken. And we all kind of gravitated to it and just thought it just kind of, it seemed pointless and silly, but it also kind of worked. And I think we just all agreed that it kind of captured a certain spirit. And again, I got just, so yeah, Brian isn't just a talented artist. You know, he really pulled some stuff out of us and really contributed to kind of the early ethos of the project.
Yeah, it was like one part free range ed tech and one part heavy metal rooster. I remember that initial conversation. I think, yeah, that's where it all came together.
Heavy metal rooster. So I might call on you. First of all, I want to thank you. This is how I hope this conversation would go, kind of free range, open. And so I do like to pick some open license music that I insert different bits on the intro and outro for this podcast. And so like I have my colleagues here definitely have access to probably some of the best open license songs that might be appropriate. And so feel free to send one my way. But if you want, I have combed, of course, the resource that I learned about from Brian, the Free Music Archive. And so I did this in a podcast recording with Maren Deepwell last week. I just gave her the names of three songs and a genre and asked her to pick. So how do you want to play this game? Do you have like a theme song or a particular heavy metal rooster song that I should use? Or I will give you the title.
Well, I mean, like the canonical version is, you know, the one that's straight from the hen house. You know, okay. I just think I just provided the link.
Okay. Well, I will do that. But just to let you know, just in my research, I found one called Chicken Dance by Parallel Park. And it's kind of like a little bit of a middle heavy metal kind of rock sound to it. A really good instrumental track. So Chicken Dance is on the table. Then there's a jazz one that just has this interesting title, and it's kind of fluid. It's called Balcarabic Chicken by Quantum Jazz. So we have sort of rock, we have jazz. I also found one called Countdown, and it's sort of a little bit more electronic, a little more kind of with a little bit of beat and scratch to it. And then kind of a really old one from the project where they digitized the old wax cylinder music. And there's one called Pick a Chicken by the Joutis Society Orchestra. So I don't know if democracy will work or you just want to let me pick, or I will probably go with Grant's suggestion because he's the real musician in the room here.
Although that Edison wax cylinder Pick a Chicken is sounding very good. I haven't heard that one. That's sounding like a good one.
It's kind of funky. So again, I just so appreciate this chance To hear from the people involved with these three great projects from BC, and to give us a sense about how they come to be. Any closing words from you, Marcela?
Just a big, big thank you to you all. It's always a pleasure to hear about your work. And I think that we can go back to your initial question, Alana, why do so many great projects come out from BC campus? And it's that answer is getting clearer and clearer just listening to you speak about your passion, the passion you have for your work and the dedication and commitment, and the collaboration. So thank you. Thank you very much. Just a big thank you.
And a big thank you to all our colleagues from British Columbia who came to share their perspective on their awards. Thank you for those listening to this episode of OEG Voices from Open Education Global. Our featured open license music today is Pick a Chicken by the Jawdust Society Orchestra, selected by Grant Potter in our episode. And it's found in the Free Music Archive, licensed under a Creative Commons by non-commercial license. By attribution, you know what that means. And so you'll find this episode on our site, voices.oeglobal.org. You'll not only find the podcast, you'll find links, you'll find more information about the projects we heard about today, and you might even find the other chicken songs that didn't make the cut. If you'd like to share your open education work, or perhaps suggest a future guest for the show, please let us know. You know what we think, that the more voices here, the better.